I would like to take a moment and mention a pressing issue we are seeing in our modern world. And that is tech use and tech light. The data are impressive and concerning on isolated wavelengths of light, especially shorter wavelengths, which is blue light. For those that don't know, we have chromophores, which are special proteins that absorbs specific wavelengths of light. For blue light, the light that is LED light and tech light, that protein is called melanopsin. Melanopsin is responsible for our circadian biology, physiology and cell functioning, hormone regulation, and even a connection to an area huge for mood. A consideration we should include is this protein was not even discovered until 1998. It seems important for us to understand how our biology uses the different wavelengths of light for various aspects of our biology. This blue light chromophore is our master controller, our master clock. Remember, circadian rhythm is a two-part process, two independent parts, light and dark. For a quick reference, see the 2017 Nobel Prize in Physiology and Medicine. But for now, I have something exciting. I want to introduce a product unlike any other product available. A highlight is the product from Daylight Computer Company created their product based on these factors. The Daylight Computer is completely blue light free. It has no flicker. Short wavelength flicker is extremely harmful for our eyes and downstream biology. Light flicker is constantly turning our central nervous system on and off. Essentially, it is like going to a light switch and repeatedly turning it on and off. The problem is, blue light and LED light does this, and it is so rapid, you cannot even perceive this in real time. The Daylight Computer is the lowest stimulation and foremost for sensory sensitive users. It is no question that the alternative product, especially when used at night, do not address or consider this in their product. It is so toxic to human biology. Big tech corporations have patents on how their short wavelength implicate the human nervous system. And a bonus, despite Daylight Computer not having backlight, it is very functional for outdoor use. And of course, increased sunlight is always preferred. I am happy to offer a discount for the Daylight Computer. You can use the code AUTISM for a $25 off coupon. Again, use the code AUTISM and the discount code for $25 off. See the link in the show notes to Daylight Computer Company, or just give it a quick search in your internet browser. Use the code AUTISM for $25 off. For today's episode, we will explore a dense part of human biology, a hot topic as well. We will cover a popular protein of the podcast, tryptophan, an aromatic amino acid, and introduce microtubules and expand on mitosis. For tryptophan, this is a very special protein whereby it has one codon. Tryptophan and methionine have only one. Remember, methionine provides a donor, SAM, S-A-M, for MTHFR, the methylene tetrahydrofolate reductase. And folate, the vitamin B9, is heavily used for DNA methylation in this process. Anyway, tryptophan, the one codon is UGG. This is really upstream in our biology, and I don't really want to go here. I don't like to go here, mainly because some of the data is mucky, and I am afraid I won't come back from this area. It's too easy with the obsessions and the restricted fixated interest that are abnormal in intensity or focus. But the DNA is ATCH. Apple tree and car in garage. The A and T and the C and G. That's high school biology. In RNA, the T is changed to U. So for tryptophan, the DNA is TGG. The RNA is UGG. For microtubules, these are train tracks for cells. They are tiny tubes and provide a track for movement and a frame for the cell to develop around. Mitosis, how cells copy each other. One, cells copy the DNA. The microtubules provide a spindle, which grabs the DNA and then splits it. An easy example of this process happening is skin repairing after a cut. For tryptophan, this is an essential amino acid and a building block of proteins. Remember, we only have 20 amino acids. And then within those 20, you can break those down into subtypes, subcategories, and so forth. The aromatic amino acids are very special. The tryptophan provides a tubulin, which is primary protein component for these microtubules. Microtubules are dynamic, cytoskeletal structures involved in cellular processes like the mitosis or intracellular transport and maintaining the cell's shape. This is all going to be important for autism. Now, admittedly, this isn't really involved much with autism research, but I have a problem with that. We need to look at these normal processes, these underlying processes of building the living organism, and find out from these upstream processes where autism is developing, what is going on, what is wrong, and what is causing these problems. And for that reason, these upstream processes are heavily important. So, the tryptophan and tubulin. Tryptophan residues are present in the amino acid sequence for the tubulin in an alpha and beta subunit. And these residues are contributors for the protein's folding stability and these interactions with other molecules. Hence, the building block. An example of this is tryptophan's hydrophobic and the aromatic properties will influence tubulin and its binding to the microtubule-associated proteins, or called MAPs. The aromatics have an indole group. So this is a carbon, hydrogen, and nitrogen. The indole group is a benzene ring fused with additional nitrogen. I would like to mention chroma, lights designed for humans. Chroma, a Seattle-based innovator founded by ex-NASA and Air Force engineer Michael Shapiro, is on a mission to enhance physical and mental health with purpose-built devices, unlocking peak human health, cognitive function, and performance. Shapiro launched Chroma to restore the natural light lost to screens and indoor living, and delivers faster recovery, sharper minds, and better sleep. Their products hit hard. The Iron Forge speeds muscle repair with red and near-infrared light, while the Skylight mimics sunlight to boost sleep and energy. A standout, the Forge Lamp is a portable gem that fires 660 nanometer and 850 nanometer light to energize mitochondria and heal tissues on the go. Remember the four red light chromophores on cytochrome C oxidase, frequently talked about in the podcast. This is why. Their products are built with military grade durability that have lasting impact. Chroma's tech fuses precision and power. Gallium titride power supplies, smaller, cooler, and stronger than silicone, provide flicker-free light that's easy on the eyes. High-powered LEDs target key wavelengths for skin, tissue, and cellular health, with smart heat management for the lasting impact. Every design decision Chroma makes serves a purpose: to create devices that are precise, durable, and effective for improving human life. Remember, humans use different wavelengths of light for different functions of life. Remember when I ask, what do you think light is? Chroma designs with our biology in mind, from sleep aids and wound healing to mitochondrial energy, full body lights, and blue light blocking glasses. They are US made, and Chroma ships globally and accepts FSA and HSA payments. Use autism at checkout for a 10% off discount. That's autism at checkout for a 10% off discount. What's special about these aromatic amino acids? As they fluoresce, we've talked about this, mainly in the Cause of Autism episode and a few other episodes from time to time. These proteins fluoresce. So this means that tryptophan's natural fluorescence means they absorb light and then emit light. What's fascinating about this is once these proteins absorb or are excited by UV light, remember 200 to 400 nanometer light, and the tryptophan peaks at 280 on the absorption, and it fluoresces, it emits light around mid-300s, I think. But in studies, scientists can use this property and monitor how the tubulin assembles into the microtubules because of the ability to observe the light. There will be a link that shows a fascinating video of this, maybe two videos. There's a part one and part two. But tryptophan and the microtubules, this is a recent video too, early to mid-March. So mitosis. This is the process by which a eukaryotic cell, mitosis is only eukaryotic cells, and this involves dividing its nucleus, the cell nucleus, to produce two separate cells. Each of the cells need the identical set of chromosomes. That is key here. It's a key part of the cell cycle in ensuring that genetic material is accurately distributed to each of the daughter cells, each of the two split cells. Mitosis is crucial for the growth of the living organism and tissue repair. Remember the cut skin. This is a big reason on how the living organism kind of maintains and lives efficiently. So an overview of the mitosis. Mitosis is a five-step process. And then there's the cytokinesis, a division of the actual cytoplasm. So the microtubules, as part of that mitotic spindle mentioned earlier, have a key role in moving the chromosomes apart and into these additional cells. So the first phase of mitosis is prophase. What happens here is chromatin, which are loose DNAs, condenses into very distinct chromosomes. And they do their magical work with chromatids and centromeres. I'm not going to get into that. But the nuclear envelope will start to break down. And then this mitotic spindle, mentioned earlier, that structure from the microtubules will begin to form. And this is a very crucial process in the transfer of information. Second stage is prometaphase. So what happens here is the nuclear envelope will fully disassemble. And this allows the spindle of the microtubules to access these chromosomes. Remember that they are transferring. They provide tracks. The microtubules' role here, some of them latch onto the various biology or molecules. And some of them, they just stabilize the spindle. And chromosomes here will start moving as the microtubules tug on them. Observe this in the video provided. The third phase is metaphase. The chromosomes will begin to align at the cell's equatorial plane. This is huge here. This will start to pull into position by the spindle, and each chromosome is attached to a microtubule from opposite poles. The microtubule here provides tensions and ensures chromosomes are perfectly centered. This is a very dynamic process, very fascinating thing. And the cells can check that all of these molecules, deeply attached here, are attached before processing, before moving forward. The fourth phase is anaphase. What happens here is sister chromatids are pulled apart and the microtubules will begin to shorten. And this separates into individual chromosomes. These cells, they begin to elongate as the microtubules begin to expand and lengthen. A huge role here for the microtubules is they shrink and they drag the chromosomes to the opposite poles. They kind of make room for these other molecules being attached. And lastly, the fifth and final phase is telophase. So the chromosomes will begin to reach these poles, their destination, and begin to decondense back into a chromatin. The nuclear envelopes reform around each set of the chromosomes, and this provides two different nuclei. Then the spindle disassembles. It's gone. It's done. The microtubule here will break down and make room for the two distinct nuclei. Cytokinesis will then happen, and this is when the cytoplasm divides. This splits the cell into two daughter cells, which has its own nucleus, as we discovered, and the organelles. So in mammalian cells, these complex cells, the eukaryotic cells, a cleavage will happen, and it forms into actin filaments, which have very dynamic roles as an organelle as well. Remember, the eukaryotic cells are more complex than the prokaryotic cells. Some roles of the actin filaments are cell movement and the cell shape, cell adhesion. Remember the conversation about T3, that the process of the thyroid and providing T3 and T4 and T3's roles, those surprising roles with cells. And also actin filaments are involved in signal transduction. These are all in the cytoplasm with things like the mitochondria and so forth, the DNA and the nucleus. So a little review here. The chromosomes carry the genetic information that's being divided These are little messengers. They're like the post office workers, Pony Express even. The microtubules will form the spindle, which will then help move the chromosomes. And tryptophan is a part of this for the tubulin. And the tryptophan contributes to the structure. So this is important. The mitosis is important because it ensures each of the split divided cells will inherit an identical copy of the genome. And with autism, you know this is implicated here. This is a region of interest here. So the mitosis and these microtubules are huge in prenatal development because mitosis is a very critical part during the embryonic development, especially in this formation of the brain. Remember neurulation. Remember those subtypes of cells with the proencephalon, the mesencephalon, and the rhomboencephalon, and how the brain is developed here. The neural tube. We've discussed the neural tube, right? This is developing the central nervous system. And this comes early in pregnancies, around that week 3 to 4, days 22 to 28 is when we're talking about here. Remember the episodes on neurulation. Cells undergo rapid mitotic division here. This is how the complex living organism becomes so complex. Microtubules made of these tubulin proteins from the tryptophan. When these things that we're talking about today are disrupted, these microtubule functions, or these any part of the mitosis cycle, this affects how neurons proliferate, migrate, and connect. Sounds like autism. Sounds like everything we cover in autism with the migration problem and the hyper and hypoconnectivity. For brain size, we've also covered this. The research shows that some children have larger brain sizes. It's not uncommon that they have microcephaly. I think UC San Diego probably does the most work on this topic. So if these neuroprogenitor cells, if they divide too much or too quickly due to that microtubule dysregulation, it becomes a problem for the cortical tissues. And remember the roles of P10. Phosphatase, tensin, and regulating this process here. In addition, post-birth, this is huge up into the critical period. The living organism, the human baby, the infant, undergoes vast and massive development at rapid paces here. This is a problem here. All of these things need to be in sync with exquisite timing. So the hypo and hyperconnections in autism is very common. It's very well established. It's undisputed. With the neuron proliferation and the migration, there's a problem here during prenatal development because these neurons in the ventricular zone, tying this back to that ventricular zone when the neural tube starts to fold and the crest becomes alive, they migrate to their destinations. They migrate based off of the tracks and the guides from the microtubules and these base structures like the radial glia. We've covered that in the neurulation and the conversations with migration. And if the mitosis produces too many neurons, or if migration goes abnormal, where are the neurons going to go? How are they going to get there or where they're supposed to go? Remember, they're supposed to migrate to similar cells, just like we flock to friends. We flock to similarities. That's the process of these neurons ought to be doing. With hyperconnectivity, this also explains the excessive synaptic connections. Remember the neurorexin, the SHANK3, and the neural ligand, there's a big problem with the synaptic connections with the autistic phenotype. With that is a process called synaptic pruning. And after the birth, the brain trims excessive connections in a process called synaptic pruning, which also involves the microtubules for transporting the materials to these areas. With autism, there's a problem with the pruning. And this leaves these crowded areas, these hyperconnected areas, locally. Remember the sensation processing episodes where there's studies showing that early on in the process of sensory, when we're processing like a visual cue or auditory cue, early in this process, we're sending these sensations down through the brain for perception, to make sense of the environment. Early in this process, the first stages, there's a problem with the sensory processing. And the downstream connections here, these distal connections, will phase out. With autism, at these initial parts of the sensory processing, it's overloaded, it's hyperconnected, so it's too much too fast. And then it phases out before it reaches more like cortical capacities or areas of the brain that can help make sense of this. The sensory processing problem is a huge phenomenon here. It is no surprise that autistics, one of the most common comorbid problems is sensory sensitivities. Remember part two of the sensory processing episode when we reviewed four papers on sensory processing. And paper 3 showed 90% of their subjects had sensory processing complications. And paper 4 showed 95% of the subjects had sensory processing problems. A problem with this is that cortical development, especially in the somatosensory cortex, and this processes touch in the auditory cortex. And remember the mesencephalon with the superior and inferior colliculi. This mesencephalon is a very important area, I think. And this its goal here is to bias our attention to the environment, make us aware of the environment. With autism, we don't care about the environment. So with the cortical development, if these microtubules that are responsible for the migration or division are abnormal, these areas won't be able to go downstream, go to their destination. In addition, a common topic is the excitation-inhibition imbalance. And this is big with the sensory processing as well, because it requires a balance, a more balanced seesaw instead of one side always high, one side always low. For autism, it's mostly high excitation and low inhibition. And the roles of this tryptophan being that aromatic amino acid and providing the tubulins for these microtubules. This is a region of interest and likely an untouched region of interest for some reason. We need to go here. Some implications with the prenatal. With the autism, we've mentioned SHANK3 and how this helps regulate the mitosis and the microtubule function for that synaptic formation and the P10. The environment is a problem. There are a lot of environmental toxins being identified now for autism. My question is, do we not have enough DHA and melanin and so forth, melatonin and so forth, glutathione? Or are the toxins just that much increased? Are we that much more exposed? Probably a little bit of both. But the main environmental toxin here that's going to do these insults is the light environment. Because we are not getting that proper sunlight, that full light spectrum, I should say. To develop, we are no different from the tree or your favorite plant outside. If we are not getting that light, we're not going to develop. But if you block the sun from the tree, you're going to think, oh, well, that's why it's dying, or that's why it didn't develop through germination. Why are we so complicated on this? Some other functions of the microtubules in early embryonic stages are during the fertilization. Why I want to mention this is because the environment of the mother here has vastly changed, and this is occurring immediately. These processes, once sperm meets egg, and we undergo this mitosis on all these cell proliferations, this comes fast. It turns the zygotic cell, 2 cells, and then 4 cells, and then it just keeps on multiplying. A key detail here is tryptophan residues. Remember those residues in that tubulin? This will help stabilize this. And if it's off immediately, everything downstream here will be off. That's why I want to go more upstream. In the womb, this happens fast, within days of conception, before you even know, weeks, maybe months before you even know that this is happening in your body. It is happening in your body. This can begin as far as, or as soon as, around day 6 or 7, that the embryo travels down the tube towards the implantation. And there are things that you can look up, like blastocyst, which is the microtubules here, will help establish the cell polarity. And then the so-called blastocyst gives rise to the inner cell mass, which is that future embryo. And then the outer blast, which is the placenta. Remember Dr. Hannah Stevens taking us through the role of the placenta from the mother and the womb, how this is developed. And already, these microtubules, they will function to make sure that these inner cell masses and that embryo is properly being exported and transferred and developed. Then giving rise to gastrulation. We didn't talk about gastrulation during the neurulation episodes, but this is occurring between weeks 2 and 3. And just briefly here, some of these roles will include transforming the cells into 3-layered structures. This is the part with the ectoderm, the mesoderm, and the endoderm that we discuss. And the microtubules here will ensure that the cells reach their designated germ layers. And then we start to form our tissues and these organs and the different nervous systems. So microtubules' role in that neurulation are critical for the neural tube formation, the neural plate folding. And these microtubules will bundle these neural epithelial cells that we've talked about and the mitosis of these neural progenitors. And a huge part here for autism, working alongside the microtubules, working alongside the radial glia. These are important, vastly important for the scaffolds responsible for the cell migration. Do you understand how complex and small this process is and how easily it could be disrupted? If you think about not having the proper exposure for the living organism to properly grow. Something we discussed quite heavily in the Autism and the Womb episode. Several episodes ago, last summer, we talked about neurogenesis. And this happens around weeks 4 to over 20 weeks into embryonic development or prenatal development. Microtubules here are heavily involved with these neurogenesis, including the axonal growth, and also the synaptogenesis. Remember that episode long ago? We talked about synaptogenesis as well. This is late prenatal to postnatal even. The microtubules here will transport materials, like the vesicles and the mitochondria. We've talked about the mitochondria in quite detail. The eukaryotic cells need these. There are many, many mitochondria in one cell nucleus. Thousands, I believe maybe even 5,000. And the microtubules are also responsible for the axons and the dendrites to form these synapses. This begins late in pregnancy and ramps up after the birth. Remember that Accelerated growth after birth. Humans are different than other primates, whereby we are vastly underdeveloped. Remember the leptin melanocortin pathway episode and how the biophotons helps accelerate this process. And leptin being like an on-off switch here. And remember the episode with Dr. Eric Weiss, how his embryonic stem cell is rescuing this. This is what I think. These nutrients and this development here that we're talking about is abnormal in the autistic phenotype, but he can use the umbilical cord stem cells to rescue this. I think this is what's actually happening. So the mother that receives or that gives this umbilical cord for this process, that mother during pregnancy did not have as many or any of these insults that will implicate these processes that we're talking about. And remember Dr. Eric Weiss also saying that sometimes that doesn't work. Maybe, just maybe, the mother that donated that umbilical cord, she did have some insults that will just not align with the autistic phenotype receiving this transfusion. I say that to say this because Dr. Eric Weiss talked about this because of the inflammation. And remember the episode with Dr. Richard Fry with the immune dysfunction, the mitochondrial dysfunction, and the inflammation, the terrible trios, he called it. Inflammation here for the maternal immune activation and these cytokines. Cytokines are very fascinating, and there are very many of them. We just keep adding a number to them. Dr. Eric Weiss highlights this in quite detail. But something like IL-6, which is heavily involved in autism research, this can stimulate the neural stem cell division in the fetus. This is a very interesting topic and a very common topic when we're talking about autism pathophysiology and so forth. IL-6. If you're listening to the podcast, listening to the episode, please feel free to leave a review or rating. In podcasting, reviews, ratings, and downloads are huge. And I very much appreciate your feedback. You can contact me on X at RPS47586. We can have conversations about autism. You can check out the Hop link for links to all of the podcasts across different platforms. You can check out the YouTube channel for full-length videos, and shorts, and clips. You can email me, info.fromthespectrum@gmail.com. And thank you for listening to From the Spectrum Podcast.